Hey everyone, it's the Red Men Originals podcast. We toyed with the idea of armbands, but I really haven't been able to sort my own life out, let alone any sort of production props ahead of this one. It is me, it is Chris Page, it is Chloe Bloxham, and it is Keo as well in the building for this one. We are going to obviously discuss Jurgen Klopp and his future and what happens now and how we're all feeling, but we will talk a bit about the game yesterday because, you know, life goes on.
Does it though, Paul?
Here we are, Chris. You know, we're living in the post Klopp world, technically, but you're not. Before we do though, I just want to draw your attention to the fact that we are on tour. We've got three dates coming up this year. Keo's going to be with us for all of them as well, which is going to be very exciting indeed. We're in Belfast, Dublin, and we're in London as well. You can get the Belfast and Dublin tickets via the ticketmaster.ie. Or you can get the O2 Indigo, the O2 ones at axs.com. Just search Redmen on there and they'll pop up. But yes, very excited to be chatting the Reds. I mean, we're definitely going to have some stuff to talk about, Chris.
Yeah, that's at least something. Yeah, we might have a big cry with everyone who's there. It promises to be really fun.
Well, it's going to be. There's a catharsis to just talking things out, so we'll have that covered. I've been saying this on a lot of videos. We've done this in the past. Like, I remember going back to 13-14 when we were on the title challenge, and we called it it wasn't quite a therapy session, but it was like a support group for if you are flapping big time at Liverpool, being on the bleeding edge of football, then we'll have you covered. When it's crap, we do. It is very much a group therapy session. But yeah, we're literally going out into the world, so you can come and have a chat with us, watch us chat Liverpool, and then watch Keo absolutely blow the roof off it as well. Have you got a guitar again?
Yeah, I've got another one now. Let's not get into that. I've had enough bad news this week. But I'm ready for it. And you know what? It's as we approach the big part of the season, and as we kick on, and although we have got some depressing news, there's four cups to win.
There is,
and
indeed.
There's a team to get behind.
I totally agree with all of that. So yeah, grab your tickets for them right now. Right, the last game then. Chloe, I'll start with you because it was interesting. You got to the ground an hour or so before I did, and you put in our little WhatsApp group about how the atmosphere around Anfield was just weird. And I was like, okay, I get that, but I didn't get it until I turned up myself. And I was trying to capture it to explain to people in video that it was different. And it's very hard to say. It's really quiet when it's not quiet, because there's 60,000 people milling around a stadium and talking, and there's cars, and there's just life. The sounds of life are quite noisy. But when you compare it to what it was normal, like I compared it to a bit like when you meet up before with your mates or your family before a funeral or something, and everyone's there and you're like, oh, hey, and then you remember why you're there, and there was an eerie quality, I thought, around Anfield yesterday.
Yeah, it was very sombre when I went there. It felt silent. I went to Hotel Anfield, completely empty. Like, it was like people were just depressed, to be perfectly honest. It felt like a city in mourning, which is just mad to say because he's literally just a football manager, but it felt like that. I then went to the bus welcome and Aaron rang me to tell me that he was nearly there, and he had to question if I was already inside the ground because it was that silent. And I was like, no, I'm at the bus welcome. And it just, everyone, you're just looking at each other and you're just going, what happens now? And it was just the feeling of like, yeah, you're with your mates, and yeah, this is a routine and usually you're well up for it, but it was just another realization of this is what it's going to be like now without him. And it was sad to say the least, but thankfully it got better as the game went on. The Reds did help us out.
Were you kicking, Keo?
Yeah, I was about to follow on from that. It was, at first it was a little bit sombre, a little bit quiet, but as I sort of got through the set, we realised, as I was saying before, we've got a cup to win, and I was trying to remind people of that. But yeah, it was definitely a little bit quieter at first yesterday, not just in the sand and either, I'd say all around Anfield. There was, I've heard it a few times this week, but people are comparing it to a family member dying.
Yeah.
And it is what that sort of move was like. It was just sort of, let's not get too happy no matter what happens here, you know what I mean? Because today is like a bit of a day of mourning.
Yeah, no one, but I think there's a bit of that. No one wants to be seen to be like skipping to Anfield in a boss mood. It reminds me of randomly of Gone Girl and Ben Affleck's character in that, when his wife's missing and he poses for a photo and he automatically goes, and smiles for a photo. So there's this picture of him, supposedly this morning husband, with a big shit-eating smile on his face. And there is always a bit of that. No one really knows how to conduct themselves, because I think that's what I put a tweet out. It really annoyed me watching the world get on with being in the world on Friday afternoon and Saturday, all these normal people just doing the shopping and driving as though the world hadn't absolutely turned on its head. This is almost unique, I think, in our lifetimes of following Liverpool, of how you're meant to conduct yourself in these situations.
The only way I can compare it to is when my granddad moved in with me when I knew he was dying. And you think to yourself, and that's, you know, I made peace with this, it was 20 odd years ago, so I can talk freely about it and stuff, but like, you know, you're getting to spend time with them and you should enjoy that, but you can't help but think this could be the last time that I'm going to spend with you and stuff like that. And you focus on the wrong things almost, yeah. Don't you? And it is mad. Like I went away this weekend, took the wife and kids to York for a weekend away from my wife's birthday. And it was that meme where, you know, where the woman's lying in bed and the fella's turned over the other side and like, what's wrong with you type of thing. And it's just like, oh, everything's just going on. And I'm just there thinking about Jürgen Klopp the whole weekend pretty much, and it's just like, how do you can't really move on, can you? You know what I mean? It's like, he's meant so much to us for so long, and he's taken us to a place that I think it's probably fair to say a lot of us probably thought we weren't going to get back to. You know, we were getting close and stuff, but he's got us over that finishing line, and that's a big difference. And you know, it does make.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You wonder whether 80% of Jürgen Klopp is still the best man for the job. That's the thing that I can't get out of my head at the moment.
You're saying it was a flat rendition of Happy Birthday for you at the weekend?
Let's just say the girls did it.
Yeah. Right, okay. Well, look, we'll swing back around to the Klopp stuff because, yeah, I want to make sure to get its own proper time and place, but we will cover the match before we get to that. Chris, first and foremost, I mean, James McConnell, didn't expect to start talking about the match, you know, on a podcast, talking about James McConnell. He felt like one of those lads who you see in pre-season and then in some regards you never see again, you know, and that was no slight on him as in ability or whatever, but you always have lads like that in pre-season games, and most of the ones we've seen so far have been really good. Odds are someone was going to be that, take that role, but I thought he was really
brilliant. Obviously the ball for Kurt Jones is superb. The fact that he's taken it on his left foot, the fact that he's seen Kurt at the back stick and knows where the space is to pop the ball in. But he's just brilliant across the board, wasn't he? He was absolutely everywhere. You know, those little sorts of niggly fouls were excellent. So, you know, an experienced DM puts those types of fouls in. I thought he was on the edge of being a little bit over the top,
yeah,
but it's understandable totally to play a game like that at Anfield.
Referee,
where you want to try.
Well,
he really did. So I just thought he was outstanding, and when you look at the crop of the young players that we've got, this might be the best crop we've ever had coming through, because, you know, I think when you look at, you know, slightly earlier of course, but Harvey Elliott, Kurt Jones, Jarrell Kwanzaa, Stefan Bicetic, you got Bradley. And you got McConnell, and when you look at all of them and say, that's like half a team of academy players you could quite easily field. And, you know, at some stage you do think to yourself, well, how many is too many in the same side? Well, I don't know the answer to that question, because every time he puts one in, he just seems to be able to do it.
I'm a huge fan here of what we've done is we've decided that there's a perfect body type and look and hairstyle, and we've just basically cloned a bunch of these like lads between the age of 17 and 20. They're all about 6 foot tall. They've all got the same. They're just the same, like McConnell, Bradley. I think Bobby Clark's dyed his hair just to make sure that he stands out. I'm a big fan of this. But yeah, it's another example of Liverpool reaping the benefits because it's the trust the Klopp's put in them. But also, yeah, you know, these players have been brought through to play a style of football. This is the almost like the first pure generation that we're seeing now who've spent their entire time at the Liverpool Academy pretty much under the Jurgen Klopp era.
It's a good point, that. I've not thought about it like that. And to follow on from Chris's point, where's the line? Well, the line is where, how you're playing, isn't it? And yesterday when the subs came on, it was because they needed a run out, not because the game needed it. We were absolutely fine. It's with the team that played yesterday. So it's exciting, isn't it? It is exciting. In particular, the right back for me, Conor Bradley. I want to touch on him because I think he's fantastic. Like, really, really good. Is he 19? Yeah. Is he 19 years old?
I think so.
Like, he looks, he's not putting a foot wrong, he's not doing too much. There's a tendency for when you come into a side at a young age and you have a good start to a match, play a few passes, make a few tackles, start spreading it, start trying to do Hollywood stuff. And he's got it in him, but he'll only do it when it's on. And it's dead sensible and it's dead calculated. I'm into him big time.
When Bradley gets two assists, he should have a third. Cody Gakpo absolutely fluffs his lines in front of goal. And that's an amazing assist from Bradley in the build-up to that as well. Let's continue with it, Chris. Yeah, Conor Bradley, we're here again. It's another week. It's another brilliant Conor Bradley performance.
You don't know how high his ceiling is, really. I don't think, do you? You watch him each game and you think he just takes it up another notch. And, you know, just to continue on what Keo was saying, for me, I look at him and I think, you know, if you were playing against him, he'd just be a bastard to play against. Because that lad must have thought, I'm going to pin him back. I'm going to make sure that he can't get forwards. The winger was doubling up with the left back all game. And he never really got an opportunity to go the other way. And, you know, his positioning's so high, but he's rapid. Like, he is absolutely rapid. His recovery pace is unbelievable. He's got the engine to do it for a full 90 minutes. He's just up and down. Bit of a Swiss Army knife in that he can play right wing towards the end of the game, or, you know, right back, or he can go into the middle if you need him to go into the middle. He just seems to make good decisions all the time. And for a young player, you do not expect to see that at all.
Is that your agent reminding you to plug the LP?
I'm not even looking, in case it's more Liverpool news.
Again, all of them. McConnell, I thought Chris's point on him was great, but I loved the tactical fouling from him. I loved the fact that he was happy to put a slide in if you're going to win Liverpool fans over. It's a bit of a dying art. And then, yeah, Conor Bradley, it's the front foot stuff there. He's got the ability to get back and do the dirty work, but the way that he just jumps on stuff, he's not afraid to go and commit because he knows he trusts his pace, which means that he'll go and press on the front foot because he believes that he'll get to the ball first.
Yeah, he does. He's proven to be quite the right back, isn't he? And we talk about modern day fullbacks. Trent reinvented exactly what that is. And for, you know, Conor Bradley to be able to look up to Trent and work alongside him, you know, Trent being that idol for him to go and follow the footsteps. You know, you've got Curtis Jones like Harvey Elliott, you look at Trent, they're all examples of what these younger lads can now do, and that is vitally important because there's a path there for them to follow, and they know that they could follow it under Klopp because Klopp had gave them the chances, and they did. Conor Bradley's first assist, by the way, he does some brilliant defensive work, a lovely one too with Diogo Jota, and then basically puts it on a plate with Darwin Nunez. Darwin Nunez's first touch is really good, but still, that should be an assist because Darwin Nunez has to put it in the back of the net, and he does. Cody Gakpo has let him down because he should have a hat-trick of assists. He's done unbelievable for that one. Even the one back post, the way he's found Ryan Gravenberch, who couldn't put a ball in the back of the net, it seems to be getting cleared off the line here, there and everywhere for him, eventually gets his goal. And yeah, Conor Bradley is proven that defensively he's strong enough, and you don't look at him and think you know, he can body someone and take the ball, but he can't. You're not getting past him. He's using his strength and he's turning on you the other way. His first thought is always forward. He's always in stepping and winning the ball. And like we mentioned McConnell there, you've all mentioned, you know, how good he did defensively with the fouls and everything. What I loved was his progressive passing. Like, it was like, sometimes on the pitch, you know, there'll be an established player who won't try and do those passes. But McConnell wasn't afraid at all to lose the ball, and the spaces that he was finding Diogo Jota and Darwin Nunes in, and one ball was breaking the line, I thought to myself, how has that lad just came in and has all the confidence to think, I'm going to thread this ball right there, I'm going to give it to you, you're going to have to, you know, control it well, and if you lose it, so what, I'll win.
He's got a bit
then.
Of the Thiago pass to him in terms of, like, he'll look one way and kind of pass the other way where you're sort of not expecting it. I think that's one of the things that I love about Thiago, isn't it? But McConnell did that two or three times in the first half, where the easy ball's there, a young player normally plays the easy ball and he just goes through the lines, boom.
There was one right on the right hand corner of the penalty area in the first half, and it's funny because from my angle I was amazed that he even considered it. When you watch it back on the telly, it's still very clever, but it's just a pass. It's a kind of pass that you see on FIFA, but when you're in the ground, you marvel at it a little bit more when you see the sort of angles behind it. And it was nothing. It was just he had a really easy ball just backwards, sidewards, play himself out of trouble, but he didn't. He spun back on it. I think he played a little ball into Jota's feet, gets it back, and then plays it square across the 18 yard box. And it's not a pivotal moment in the match, but it's a young lad making his full debut in a, you know, in a game that was a pretty competitive game by that point as well. Yeah, I really like to see that. I want to move things on, and I'll come to you, Keo, because Andy Robertson's return, and in a game that was a bit up and down and actually a little bit flat, really, obviously the Aiken Cop thing looming large over everything, one of the biggest moments was actually the cheer for Andy Robertson coming back on the pitch. It's mad. I've not thought about him, which is, I think, is the best compliment to how Liverpool have handled themselves without Robertson. But I got a real sense of, like, I don't know, I'd love to bottle the feeling that I felt seeing Andy Robertson run back on the pitch. It was like, it was assuredness. It was like, oh God, we've got, it's Andy, you know, this is not just like a random player. Like, Szoboszlai came back, but like, he's not a proper Liverpool player yet, is he? Whereas Robertson is. He's just tried and tested. We love him to bits. You know what he's going to do for you. Yeah, I got a great sense of comfort and happiness seeing Robbo back.
I think part of it's because he's a winner.
Yeah.
And we know what we're on for. I keep touching on this, the four cups thing, but part of what's driving us and driving our energy at the minute is the fact that we want to win titles. So when he comes back on, I say it's reassuring because we didn't really need him and we haven't really struggled too much without him because Joe Gomez has been so good, and when Simic has played, he was fantastic. So it's almost like, wow, we've got real depth here.
Yeah.
And to say it again, the players that come on yesterday didn't need to come on. It was so they get their legs and they start getting minutes. So to have players like that coming back, it's massive. And it was the biggest cheer of the day, wasn't it?
Yeah, genuinely. It feels cause a bit like cheating. Like, you know, there was a time when we looked at our bench in the last couple of weeks and we went, oh, right, there's two lads on there who can come on and make a difference. That's what we've got left. How are we going to handle this? And you rewind back to... well, Robertson getting injured and how terrified we were of Tsimikas having to play a run of games. Of course, at that point, we had no idea Joe Gomez was the best left back in the world. Then losing Salah and Endo to AFCON and Asia Cup. Of course, we had all these sort of things looming. Then we had an injury crisis land upon us as well. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, freaking hell, all these lads are coming back. And we're going to have some really interesting conversations around the fullback areas as well now, because, you know, you got Robertson back and obviously Trent back, of course, but like we've been talking Bradley up now for 3 weeks.
Who'd have thought a few weeks ago Conor Bradley might be the Salah replacement?
Robbo wouldn't start.
But that's kind of like, you know, Cobby was talking before about, you know, Conor Bradley being able to sit behind Trent and see him. I actually liken him more to Robertson. I just think he's exactly the same as Robertson in terms of who they are. And, you know, I think Liverpool have sort of shifted tactically over maybe the last two or three games where both fullbacks are getting forward into the sort of second level. You're leaving the two centre halves. You got your DM. You got your two fullbacks. Obviously, Bradley a little bit higher. Gomez a little bit more inside. And I actually fancy us to shift it the other way when Trent and Rob will come back. Mm-hmm. I think Trent goes more into the middle, and the left back gets a little bit higher up the pitch. And I think you could see that when Rob came on and just played it completely differently to how Joe Gomez did. But you know, there's horses for courses again with this squad, isn't there? And you know, you look at how, you know, people always say the iron sharpens iron, and in terms of football matches, we're a better squad now for having those injuries to Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold and everyone else, because we've got to see Conor Bradley, we've got to see Joe Gomez put a run in at left back, Tim Acast do it before him, and you know, obviously McConnell now coming through and stuff. So our squad is better for the injuries, which is a weird thing to say.
That's not what's meant to happen. What's meant to happen is we're meant to be clinging on for dear life on our absolute arse. And then these players come back in, and then what happens is all the ones who've been running to the ground are then fucked for the rest of the season. And then you've got all the ones coming back in who've been injured, and they've got all the responsibility on their shoulders, and then we like struggle through. Whereas, Chloe, we've literally gotten through it with all those players.
Gotten
better at football. Whilst also
went top.
Going top of the Premier League, getting to the final of the League Cup and getting into the fifth round of the FA Cup. It's insane. As we go back to my original point, it feels like cheating. We've just brought Robertson, Trent and Szoboszlai back into this squad. Friggin' Thiago was in training pitches this week, Chloe. Mm-hmm. For God's sake. Like, it just, yeah, it feels like the stars are aligning for us.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I don't want to say it does because who knows what will happen, but These moments now have created opportunities as well for those. And look, Bradley knows that as soon as Trent is back fully fit and can play a full 90, it's likely that he'll come back into the start. But we can't run these players into the ground. You've seen Trent already pick up little niggles here and there when he's been asked to go and go again. So we know that for now, even if Bradley does come in, getting a 20-minute here or there is perfectly fine for him. It's more experience, and it's great to see the youngsters come in, but it's also unbelievable to see the unity, because when McConnell went off, every single player, Cody Gakpo, all of them went round and was like, well in lot. Yeah. Like, they were... And that's the recognition of like being and playing well, but also these are the lads that they get to see in training. And we've heard about Darwin Nunes, who's been one of the biggest supporters, the young lads coming through, and you can see it throughout the squad. Everyone just wants everyone to do well. Yeah. And if you take your opportunity, fair play, because that just means that there's healthy competition there for everyone in the team, and that strides you on, that makes you better, that elevates your game. And we need every single part of this squad if we want to even try and attempt to go for all of the four competitions that we're in.
Yeah, it's a stupid moment. It was Curtis coming off and being the happiest man on the pitch to be replaced by Dominic Szoboszlai. You know what I mean? Like, I just, you know, look, going like toe-to-toe with him and like laughing. It's like, oh, go on, lad. Go on, you go. Get on the pitch. And there's part of you that goes like, what's he doing? That's not meant to be what it's like, but they do. They're bought in to each other in a huge way. Love it. Just quickly, their second goal, absolute banger. I do like here one of those rare moments where you get to like applaud something the other team does. It's a very Liverpool thing. Doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
But I mean, and it is a bit, I'm not sure we'd have done it if it was a club we had genuine antipathy towards, but yeah, if you're gonna score a goal past Alisson Becker, that's pretty much what it's gonna have to look like.
Make sure we don't lose the game. Make sure everything goes right, but then it was a great finish. Like, to be honest with you, I've watched it back, and I think if you do that 10 times to Alisson, he'll probably save 7 of them, 8 of them. Do you know what I mean? But on that day,
he hit it pretty well, didn't he? I'll just stick with you, mate, because I thought Chloe touched upon Gravenberch's goal before. You know, it was a brilliant save from the goalie about 10 minutes or so earlier to deny him. But I think we needed that fifth goal, and that sounds so privileged when I say it out loud. Well, I just really needed that quinoa for my toast. No, we needed that for the feeling, because as much as it would have been a 4-2 win, and it was going to be, Liverpool were going to win that tie ultimately, they were far and away the better team. The whole the Jürgen Klopp thing, it's so prevalent, it's so at the forefront of everyone's mind, and actually just having that one more moment to say we scored the last goal, everyone's in a good mood, and then we're going to sing to you. There was no hint of oh, but you know, like there was no downer to it. I think it just helped the occasion ultimately.
It feels like it's clicked, doesn't it, when it goes clear by three goals or you put five in the back of the net. I think what we're all searching for now is we want that feeling of it clicking. We know we haven't played well, although we have played well, we've played the best in the league, but we haven't played to what we think is our full potential all season, and we know the bar that Liverpool set in the past is so high. So we want it to feel like it clicks before it's not there to click anymore under Klopp. So I think when a fifth goal goes in and it is a great win to go with the mood of the week to finish that off, then it feels a little bit better. But yeah, I think that's probably what it is. I think we'll notice that now as the season goes on, whether it's the Europa League or whether it's a big league game. We'll want to win, obviously, but we want to see it click because we know we can do it.
Yeah.
Gavin Birk needed it as well, though, didn't he?
Yes.
I think that's what it comes down to for me. Obviously, my experience of watching the game was different to everybody else. I was very much watching it on my own, no Twitter, no nothing, trying to avoid the score because I got home just as the game was finishing and stuff. So put it straight on and watched it through in its entirety. And my
how did you manage not to pick your phone up during that, by the way?
It was a good game for a start. That really did help. And I'd muted all my WhatsApp groups as soon as Chloe messaged in the morning about the atmosphere. I went through all of them and just went mute, so no problem there. So I got to watch it uninterrupted. And my sort of say, I was thinking to myself just before it gone in, I was like, everyone's leaving the field buzzing here but Gravenberg. And that was what I was thinking just before he puts the ball in the back of the net, because everyone else had something to hang their hat on apart from him. It's just more of the same for him, and I know that's his, I think it's his third goal now for us or something, but it's always felt like he's the last of the signings to really get rolling, and I think you could see that in the frustration of his celebration almost, couldn't you? At the end of the game and stuff. So and then that for me was just like, yeah, that's what he needed. Now everyone walks away totally happy with everything.
Great example of football tribalism / double standards, where I watched Anthony celebrate for Manchester United and went, get off the floor, you dickhead. But then was absolutely made up for Ryan Gravenberch screaming his lungs out with Liverpool's fifth in a win over Championship. So yeah, kind of is what it is. I made up for Liverpool. It was just a nice moment, Chloe, wasn't it? Because everyone was singing Klopp's song, and it was ongoing. It was going to see us out of the game, and then Gravenberch scored in the middle of it. So yeah, it was just a high note for the game to end on, really. And then it meant that when Klopp, the game, the full time whistle goes and Klopp comes out, everyone's just in full voice for him.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what the goal did do, because you know we stop singing the song and we all start celebrating, and Ryan Gravenberch doesn't have a song for Liverpool, so what do we do? He doesn't have a song for Liverpool.
I think he does have a song. I was like, okay, right.
So what do we do? We go with the next best thing, and that was Klopp, and it really set the tone, because everyone was then bouncing, everyone was still made up. Yeah, we'd have still sung it had we not scored, but you just had that extra bounce, you had that extra laugh with your mate and start bouncing to the song again. And it went up a couple of decibels when Jürgen then, you know, comes onto the pitch at full time and gives us the heart. And he obviously didn't want to give us the fist bumps and everything, but I think it was fine for that moment. We knew it was against his best man in David over there. So, it was a great way to finish the game, a real high note. Boss for Ryan Gravenberch, because he could have had two, or he genuinely could have had a hat trick. He had one cleared off the line in the first half and that second one, which was a ridiculous save. All, you know, good vibes all around, and also, you know, what a way to end by basically singing Jürgen down the tunnel.
How did you all manage to do the broken heart back to Jürgen? When he did his big heart, did anyone attempt to do a broken heart back?
45
valuable. Turn your back on him. Bless him. Yeah, emotional times. The video of him like having his head down while You'll Have a Walk Alone was playing and stuff.
And see, that's till I got home last night. Is he? And I think the club know he was, but no one was the big. Do not post that. Do you know what I mean?
Anyway, we're going to have to talk about it. We'll take a very brief break, and then when we return, we're going to talk about what the hell we do with our lives and managerial seat. Now the Klopp is going to be, we know he's going to be leaving the club. More on that after this.
It is January, it is 2024, and we've got an incredible legend prize draw for you this month. Yes, it is Kostas Tsimikas signed Liverpool shirt. He signed it. He was very kind to sign it. He's done an incredible job for Andy Robertson over the last few weeks, months. We can't wait to give this one away. If you want to get yourself in the hat to win that incredible prize, then you need to be a legend subscriber at redmenplus.com. Every single month, without fail, we will give away something incredible. This month, as you've seen, it's the Kostas Tsimikas shirt signed by the man himself. So you, all you need to do is get into that legend tier and you're in with a chance. Do it. Do it now.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Redmen Originals podcast. Look, we're going to be chatting Jurgen Klopp, of course we are, but just a little reminder, if you want to get involved, last couple of days chance to do this, go to redmenplus.com, use the code Klopp and get a free month of everything we're doing over there. So we're going to be doing Bias Football podcast that immediately follows after this, talking about general football, all the Mikel Arteta Barcelona rumours, which have been very quickly shot down, but it doesn't mean we can't have a little chat about it over on there, and of course loads more Jurgen Klopp fallout. There's a good interview with Marcus Fjortoff and Dan Club as well, talking about Xabi Alonso as a potential Liverpool manager. So yeah, go and check that out. Free for a month with the code Klopp. Right. It's funny, we've all kind of dipped into it off camera. Every one of us, how have we all coped with outsiders in this situation? Because I've been quite blessed by, my timeline's been so full with Klopp positivity and shock and all that, I haven't really seen any reactions from other people. I quickly scroll past like a Gary Neville Instagram post, but my sister-in-law came around on Saturday night and just said, and she like just could not give less of a shit about football. It's not from Liverpool. And then she said, I'm really sorry about Klopp. And mercifully, she's got enough about her to gauge my reaction and go, I know you don't give a shit about me saying that to you. And I was like, good. I'm not ready to talk about it. I was like, no, I'm not. You don't want to talk to me about it, and I definitely don't want to talk to you about it. So I've managed to avoid that. But yeah, my wide WhatsApp groups go absolutely crazy for days. I haven't been able to engage with it. I've knocked back like so many media requests because I just can't be asked to do more than I have to. How have you been, Chris?
The five stages of grieving have all been hit at some point. You know, there's definitely been a lot of denial, unfortunately, maybe some acceptance towards the end of it and stuff like that. And I think that's kind of how you have to sort of work it through yourself, don't you? And then someone else will say something to you and be like, oh yeah, fuck, can't believe that. Like, it's just, it doesn't, the thing I can't get my head around is, he doesn't look like a man who's hit the wall to me, but you can never judge that, can you, from the outside looking in?
He didn't until I saw him talk about having to do press conferences in his press conference.
Well, yeah, there was that.
And I was like, oh yeah, there it is.
But quite happily done six press conferences a week or whatever it is.
Send assistant, there's a button for that, right?
I mean, to be fair, I think Liverpool have kind of been helping him out with that and answering all the questions before the press conference has been coming out for the last year and a half.
So if I can just rotate my goalie for the League Cup, I can definitely rotate me whoever does my press conference.
I think, yeah, you know, every person wants to talk to you about it, don't they? And everyone wants to get something off their chest as well and speak about it. And you're almost like, we're all going through the motions because we've all got to be there for each other as well as trying to deal with it yourself. And that's like, and there are people who are just reacting in completely different ways. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of people who just can't get their head around why this is happening at all.
Yeah. Keo, how have you been?
Not good, like, to be honest. But he's given us everything, so we can do what he wants. And I am in that camp. I do think he looks a little bit knackered. I think you can see it in his eyes a little bit. I think there's times where he's got a little bit ratty, a little bit fed up at times. That's probably a sign that we didn't see over the past couple of seasons. It's clear he probably wanted to go when he signed. His Ulla has convinced him to stay. He started the next 2 years of the project, and I think the comment he made to the players where he said, it's your fault for getting good so quick. I think there's an element here of, he couldn't leave us when we went crap. Signed a new deal, and he's done 2 years work in 6 months here. He was to build a side up that was ready to get passed on, that can challenge again, and we're already at that point, and he is sick of it, and he is knackered, and it's like the perfect time for him to say, right, this team's going to compete again. It's young, I've built it, I can't go the distance with it, and I can't rebuild it again if it starts falling down. So I think that's his decision. How I feel about it, like, is I'm just absolutely gutted, and it's probably never going to be the same again. And that's not to say that we won't win more trophies. It's not. We've seen it in the past, at Shankly and Paisley, you know, how it works, but I just don't think it's going to be as fun as it.
It's tough, innit? I mean, Chloe, what was your weekend like? Because you came in here basically to have
distraught
other people around you.
Yeah. I reckon I've gone through about 30 breakdowns in the past 3 days. And I think that's, you know, quite a low number for me after news like this. I've been devastated. Jürgen Klopp came into the club when I was 14. I'm now 22. For near a third of my life, Jürgen Klopp's the only manager I've ever seen or I know. And not just that, you know, when Rafa Benitez left, I was too young to fully understand what losing a manager like that was. With Brendan Rodgers and Roy, it was different because we didn't feel like we were represented by them, where this is harder to grasp. A, because it felt like he was in the rebuilding process, but we're about to get back to the top potentially. Like, you could do that for us and you could keep us there again. And it did come, you know, out of the blue for me. It was a little bit of a shock. And I think the shock was what initially, you know, got me. Now, a couple of days later, I've just came to the conclusion that there is nothing that is going to change Jürgen Klopp's mind. Absolutely nothing. He's came out and said that, so I might as well just deal with it and, you know, cry on the last day of the season. But till then, make some unbelievable atmosphere when I'm inside the stadium and get behind the lads. But what I would like to reiterate is winning trophies for Liverpool Football Club is great, but that is not what I'm going to remember Jürgen Klopp for. It's the human being that is Jürgen Klopp, because to be manager of Liverpool Football Club, it's different than being manager of any other team in the world. We want to be represented. We want you to be one of us. And it felt like that. He had the same morals, had the same values as the city, as myself. And he represented us. He stood up for the working class. He stood up for the minorities. And it's most definitely the human being, Jürgen Klopp, more than the manager, Jürgen Klopp, that I will miss, because without his infectious personality, like, that is what I bought into. Not the fact that he could make a squad unbelievable.
It's everything. That's why it's the impossible job. I mean, I walked onto the cop and I went in the corner, bottom corner. I don't normally do that, and then just so I could get a bit closer to the pitch and what have you. And I walked up, and as I was filming something, this guy tapped me on the shoulder and started saying, "How are you doing? You know, who?" And he was like, "Who do you think's going to be next?" And I was like, "Oh, mate, like I'm." And he said, "Like, why isn't Rafa being considered? Rafa's available." And I was like, "I think that ship sailed." And then he said, "Well, who?" And I went, "Oh, Zabi." And he went, "Oh, well, no, he said he doesn't. I've heard that he doesn't want it because it's too soon." Well, then who? And I was like, "Lads, that's well deeper than I've had time to consider this here." Like, you know what I mean? If I was a hat person, it was a hat and, you know, sunnies, get me head down, not interact with the world kind of match for me at the weekend. But it got me. I've been thinking about this, and it's why it's so hard to think about. Of if Jürgen Klopp had all been the man that he was, but he played either a shit brand of football or he just wasn't a very good manager, we wouldn't be anywhere near as arsed about him. And we've had managers who've played really good brands of football and whatever, and we got behind, but haven't necessarily had the charisma and the personality to go above and beyond. He was just everything, and that's what makes that conversation so hard, because I'm looking around, I'm trying to feel how I feel. It's a bit like trying to test whether something's going to burn you by putting your hand towards it. And I'm kind of like, I'm mentally sort of saying the names, and I'm imagining them, and I'm imagining them, you know, me trying to talk about them be Liverpool manager, and how does that imaginary situation make me feel? And every one of them that I see linked has got something that makes me go and wince, because I mean, Chris, like, ultimately, we did a big show on this at the weekend, but how do you replace the man who had...
You can't replace him, can you? Because he was the perfect fit for us. He was the perfect fit for Liverpool. And he's the best manager in the world. He just happens to be that. So whoever we get isn't going to be as perfect a fit for Liverpool. And they're not going to be as good a manager as Jürgen Klopp. And that goes back to their point about, you know, you can still win trophies and stuff, but it can also still be the end of an era. You know, now you need the opportunity to prove that you can be a perfect fit for Liverpool. Jürgen, day one, did a very good job of convincing us that he was, but he showed us over the course of 9 years that he was the perfect fit. You can't give someone what, imagine what 9 years of them does.
Yes.
And that's the thing that will unfortunately hold back whoever we think about in the role next, because you've got to go there and do it and you've got to be a part of it. And, you know, it was everything. Like, you know, it was a big, I sort of think back, obviously we've been doing this since 2010 now, but I think one of the biggest things for Jürgen was those first videos with your mate Jamie, you know, and seeing, you know, how happy Jamie was, but also how happy Klopp was to be in the room and be with fans and all that type of stuff. Jürgen's taking it from the pitch and the sideline to almost putting his arms around everybody and understanding what it is to be a Liverpool fan more than any manager maybe has done since the Premier League walls were essentially put up.
On that as well, what it is to be Liverpool as a team as well, to be fair, we were lost. Like, we didn't have a way of playing. We used to always scroll back 20 years and go, we used to play like this. It's like, what were we for many years, even winning trophies? We didn't have an identity as we have now. And I think it's a question of whether we don't need another Klopp, if you know what I mean by that. That job's been done. Like, we know what we are. We know who we are, how we should play, the commitments required. We know what players, if they step out of the line, we don't have that. There's a code of conduct. There's a way of playing. I think we just need someone who can take it, if you know what I mean. I'm not going to get into the names yet because I know you're going to touch on it in a minute, but there's going to be comparisons to Shankly and Paisley. Now, Paisley was nothing like Shankly. Nothing like him at all. Nowhere near the big, massive character when you walk in the room. Nowhere near as harsh, aggressive, anything like that. Didn't take the mick out of you, anything like that. He just allowed them boys to carry on doing what they're doing and be the best team in the world. So there's that, and there's a blueprint for that, really. And I think it's up to the club to find out who can harness it. We don't need somebody to come in and wipe the slate clean and go, right, here's what we do now. We need someone to come in and go, what you've been doing is great, fantastic. I'm going to change this, I'm going to bring this man in, I'm going to win everything. That sounds simple.
Someone who's a bit better in finals it sounds stupid, but because it's one of those things. Klopp even joked about it in his press conference of like he hasn't won loads of finals. He's been to loads, but it sounds stupid. But I was trying to think about what someone could come in and be and make us a bit, because there was a period where we were just unbeatable in finals. You couldn't win a final against Liverpool. We beat you in a penalty shootout. We do whatever it takes. And then we went through a period. It was Kiev was ultimately the culmination of going.
Arles as well.
We need to stop finding new ways to lose at the final, for the final hurdle or whatever. But it's a very small, just be absolutely elite. Win a quadruple, which is going to be dead hard if he does that this year.
But it's not just Klopp, is it? It is the whole, you know, the backroom staff, and I think that's probably the right decision. And interesting to hear Klopp, when he did his press conference before Norwich, talk about Pep Linders and all that type of stuff going on and having a career and a go for themselves. It kind of already says that the decision has been made not to even approach Pep Linders, or maybe there was something said to him where it's like, we're not going to consider you for the job or whatever. Whole other news story, of course, but that's sort of the director of football, how the data management comes into it. It's not just the personality, is it? It's someone who's going to fit seamlessly into this thing that actually doesn't really exist without Jürgen Klopp. And I think that's probably the biggest and hardest thing for Liverpool to get
over. It's how integrated he is, because I remember doing some work with Pro Evo years ago, and we did a press conference for it in the Anfield press conference room, but we got like a bit of a tour while we were going into it. And I think they've been doing it on the tour since, but the tour guy was basically saying, and Jürgen Klopp is effectively the leader of Liverpool Football Club. And it was a mad little thing, but it was basically the official line of saying, this is the guy, everything points towards Jürgen Klopp. Now, where Man United got it wrong was he just had too much. There was too much control all ran through one fella. So when you unplugged him, we was joking about it. Like, when you take someone out of a business, you don't realise how much of that job they've internalised that goes beyond the job spec. And that's where things can fall down. Whereas the hope is that, and it's, you know, it sounds stupid because Jürgen Klopp means so much to so many different people. but is this can Liverpool actually run with its head cut off for a bit? You know, does it need Jurgen Klopp to be there, or do all these systems function independently and he's just the guy who puts a sprinkle of magic on top? That's what I guess we're gonna find out in it, because if it's not, then it's gonna be a more deeper rooted problem, I guess.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Just on the press conference, did we watch his leaving press conference, or everyone see it? Because I watched it on my phone as I was picking my daughter up from school. People tapped me on the shoulder and I was like, listen to him. Any takeaways from it? Anything that made you feel better or worse or anything, Kyle?
No, just the fact that he said that he was obviously hit with that. Sir Alex Ferguson said he was leaving, but then didn't. Anyway, anything that can happen that can make you feel that, and his outright answer was a no. So there was any hope that I had left just instantly disintegrated.
At first, he was a little bit like, did he? As if like, yeah. Maybe I'm normal for thinking this then. Know what I mean? No, not gonna. I was like, oh, the dream's over.
Yeah. That was the moment where I was like, okay, so I couldn't possibly sing my heart out enough for you to change your mind.
I need to know. I've not spent more than a fleeting few moments in the company of Billy Hogan, so I don't really know what he's like as a person. But it was his supremely confident smile throughout a lot of it that got me like, I don't know, it's weird because you can read quotes and then you can watch things and then also you can then be in the room. I always found that with certain managers, I always felt better being in the room with Brendan Rodgers than I did watching him on video, and then even more so reading his sort of quotes. So if I was to read what Billy Hogan said, I wouldn't get this from him. But the fact, you know, when he's just talking about the process of like going about the recruitment, and I just want to know whether he's a smiler or not, is what I'm saying. Or whether he's just a dead, or whether it's super smart, or is it just that? Because I read it as like, he had this almost like bubbling of like, I'm quite excited about this, or do I know something that he can't tell us yet, or whatever. And this could just be me totally plugging the gaps in the lack of information. But I did feel better for him being there and him actually talking quite sensibly about the whole thing. I don't know about anyone else.
I thought he was really good. I do think that, I don't know, and this might be just me, I do think there was a disconnect in what he was saying about Landers and the coaching team and what Jurgen Klopp then said. Because he answered the question first and said, sort of, I think, knew that Jurgen wanted to say something and said, oh, Jurgen will be able to say something about this as well. I think Klopp maybe would have liked Landers to have been given maybe the job or something like that. And I just got that little sort of weird thing where I was like, these two aren't on the same page on this one issue. Mm. And I felt they were on the same page for everything else. But that, again, that just might be me.
I always thought that would be the case.
Yeah.
I always, like, even whether it was Pep got the job or Pep stayed as number two and a manager came in, I always thought we might resolve back to the boot room thing where a manager leaves, somebody else comes in and we keep everything the same. And I'm like that with Billy there. I don't know whether he was smiling as if, like, don't worry about jobs or don't, we've got our man. Like, we're not flapping here. Or whether it's like pure PR.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I've got to portray this.
Yeah, yeah, because, yeah, like, whether it's just that's what he's got to do. I've spent a little tiny bit of time with Billy Hogan, and he's clued up. I'm not just talking clued up on a court, but I'm talking clued up on talking about dodgy fire stick level. Do you know what I mean? Like, so, like, he's on it. You know what I mean? And he'll know exactly what we're all thinking, and he'll know exactly what all the supporters groups are thinking, and all this type of thing. So, yeah, I thought that whether that, because the fact that Pep Linders and that got told, or they announced that they're going as well, makes me lean towards Liverpool have got the man.
Yeah.
So Klopp told them in November, don't say nothing about it. Go and find the man. The man's now said, yeah, I'm coming. I want the full backroom team with me. So they've had to now relieve the other people of the positions. But then when we get into the candidates, is there anybody you can make a decision on now?
Yeah, I know that. And that is really interesting. We'll pick up with that, because I've just got one last point I want to raise from the press conference, because I think that's a really fascinating take. I quietly loved how he just bodied Jose Enrique.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just because he put the tweet up basically saying it's to do with FSG and spending and transfers. And to literally name drop a former player, his former player as well, to camera and shut down. And then, because it's
the fact he looked at the lens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just want to make it perfectly clear.
You must wind them up, you know.
Yeah, because we do this, and look, I'm not going to get lost in this, because, you know, it's the usual suspects, and we end up in the firing line from people who are staunch, who've made not wanting Fenway Sports Group to own Liverpool their personality. But, like, the amount of times Jurgen Klopp has gone to it, and it's forever backed up by, yeah, but there's bosses and all that. And look, it's still the case. And I guess, maybe there'll be a great expose in a year's time or 2 years' time. But I thought Jurgen Klopp handled it really well, saying it's not perfect, because no relationship's perfect. We've had disagreements on stuff that happened, but, you know, and I thought it goes back to his point. He said, like, we got 97 points. Buying more players wouldn't have got you over the line there, because you don't get more than 97 points in the league. I mean, the City got 98, so it's possible, but it's not at the same time. We got to 3 Champions League finals. More players wouldn't necessarily have been the thing, because you were in that game. You just had to win that game of football, and then you did it. They were the differences. And then just as unequivocally as possible, kind of say, I'll just shut up about all this, because I'm not leaving because of transfers. Because I've seen, of course, comments everywhere saying, transfers and all this kind of thing. Conspiracy theorists will find things to suit their own narratives or whatever. I will take what Jürgen says on face value for now, until reason. I've got reason to doubt what he said, and again, until the big book of his life comes out and he goes, oh no, that John Henry was a gobshite, and he robbed all these players off me or whatever, like Rafa did, all Rafa's books and all Rafa ever talks about. Till then, no, I thought it was a nice way to undercut a lot of, like, the bullshit fucking narratives that were spinning out of it. Right, okay, what happens now? We've got a ton of super chats, and then we'll pick up on this. Liam Bento says, it's more than just replacing Jürgen as a manager, but also as a personality. Worst thing that can happen is we end up with an incompetent manager, but a boring manager is a close second for me. Yeah. Here's one from Regan. Why isn't Pep being considered? And what about Carlo? Now, I presume he means Guardiola here.
say Ancelotti.
No, I was like, does he mean Linders or Guardiola?
Well, yeah, and again, look, for the sake of being a bit, I don't think there's any world where Pep Guardiola walks out of Man City. But if you were
going to, FSG wouldn't want him in charge. They'd have to spend a lot more fucking money, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But you know what?
But he'd love to manage us.
I genuinely think he'd love to manage Liverpool. I think he would enjoy managing Liverpool for one season more than he's enjoyed his entire time at Manchester City.
I agree.
Fact, yeah, totally. But you know, because you could go and win a fucking League Cup and have a parade and have more people to, you could just hold a parade with no trophies and more people would turn up. More people greet our coach before a match than turn up to see City winning trebles in the city. So yeah, have a go, Pep. Why not?
What about Carlo then?
I'd take Carlo just to piss the Everton fans off.
Yeah, at this point, absolutely love him.
Like. Having with his big red Christmas tree.
You know what we should do? We should sing Carlo Magnifico and just rob their song as well, like they robbed off us anyway.
Yeah, it's another cursed song, so no. but yeah, okay, cool. Hamza says, it seemed to me Klopp felt the same as everyone yesterday. Yeah, he definitely seemed to be taken a little bit by the emotion. He tried his best to be like, oh, no, the decision's made, so it's all good. And then he walked out and you can see him go, oh, God. Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. Ajabri, three guarantees in life. Life ends, tax and conservatives. Heads up, Reds. Let's get behind the lads and Klopp and cheer them on to a quad. Josh Owen says, Darwin, oh, we were talking about Darwin before. I forgot to do this one. Darwin, first player in top five leagues, have 10 plus goals and assists, and he doesn't take penalties. Are people judging him unfairly? Yes. And one of those goals was a penalty, just so you know, but that's fine. Paul B. So still gutted, but buzzing at the idea of Zabby, and MK has just sent in a super chat. Thank you so much. Okay, so Chris Pajak. The coaching staff are leaving. It's not outside the realms of possibility, but just picking up from this thing of, do you think there's something boxed, to answer Keogh's question first and foremost, if that's the case, who the frig was there back in November that would have been high up on this list? Would Zabby have been on high up on the list? And if that,
I think the Zabby might have been close to the top of the list.
I think it's
November.
More now, isn't it? So like, he's told the club in November and they've been like, there's no, we haven't got a clue. But now after three or four months, they've sort of got the man, and that's why the announcement's come now. Or is it just because Jürgen wanted to give the staff some time? I do think there's something in the fact that they...
Well, he said himself, didn't he? He'd have preferred to just end the season and then say that he was leaving. So, because he does, the thing about Jürgen is he doesn't like the distraction. It's like his whole thing with the song.
It's why he did the press conference for as long as he did, to sort of end it. They're all the questions. That's the end of that conversation. Then.
Yeah. Sorry, anyway, Chris.
So I don't think Liverpool have started the search, because I don't think they'd have been able to keep it a secret if they've started the search, unless it was just one guy they were going to. That's the only way, I think. But as soon as you start getting agents and players and everything else involved, I do think it becomes very hard to keep your arms around it all. So I'll probably take them at the word right now and hope that they've already done it.
Yeah. It's interesting, Athletic did a video 3 months ago on who should be Liverpool's next manager, which I thought was very wonderfully timed when you consider how well the dates line up. Clem?
I think Joe mentioned this earlier, right? Yeah, and he said what he thinks is the documentary that's coming out, maybe that was the first little piece that, you know, the journalists got a hold of, and Liverpool wanted to instantly stop any more rumbling coming out, and just came out and said to Jürgen, right, we're going to have to announce this, because that documentary seems like it is, because Jürgen Klopp is leaving, you know, the last couple of months are going to be documented and potentially who comes into the club. So when Joe said that earlier, that actually made sense to me, that maybe this was a piece of information that the journalist didn't realise exactly what it was for, but I'd got a hold of the fact that there was a documentary coming, and Liverpool thought, right, it's just better us just coming out and saying exactly what's going to happen here, so that once again the distraction later on in the season, you know, it isn't too big. But yeah, I don't know. Look, when it comes to the next manager, Klopp's irreplaceable, so you're going to have to, for me, find someone who fits Liverpool, and the person who fits Liverpool is Xabi Alonso. Do I think he's experienced enough? No, but you're going to have to give someone a go, and a manager isn't going to come in here and only get 6 months, only get a year. They're going to get 2 years at least, I think, to try and at least build something. And if you do that, you need the right characteristics and the right personality, and I think Xabi Alonso would be that.
Regan replied back, as he said, it's Pep Linders, not City's Pep. Oh. So that's the thing that's wild for me, because Paul Tompkins has written some great stuff on this over the weekend. I'd highly recommend checking out the Tompkins Times if you ever want to feel better about Liverpool when they're in a mire, because he's the best of the best when it comes to Liverpool writers. But the Pep stuff, for me, I think there's like a rebound element whenever you get another manager after a big heroic, you know, legendary manager. And sometimes it's like we've all been in the rebound relationships where normally what it is you try to jump in at the stage that you left your previous relationship, and then you burn through it really quickly, and that relationship never lasts quite as long. And there was something, I think, too, you keep Pep, you try and convince Pep Linders to stay another season or two, or you know, and if it works, then you've got your next manager. But moreover, that you're not potentially setting fire to a load of stuff, because it might just be too big a job for anyone to take on straight off the back of Klopp. Like, if Liverpool walk out of this season with four trophies, heaven help who follows that. Because, like, Liverpool managers themselves have struggled to live up to the what they've done. Like, Rafa Benitez, stock was never higher than 2005. He was always managing in his own shadow. You know, God knows how many managers followed. You know, Brendan Rodgers having to follow Kenny Souness, having to follow Kenny in 1990 and so on. Everyone who's followed, you know, people who followed Ferguson, people who followed Wenger. It feels like, that's why I'm hoping that they've got a better idea, because if they're just beginning the process, like, now, that feels mad to me, because you could have just done it, moved heaven and earth, kept Pep in place, maybe put a new assistant in alongside him and give yourself that breathing room to go and get, to continue to look for someone else. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think the club fancy him, to be honest with you. I think that's the only reason that they're letting him go. That's the only one that can make sense to me. I think, you know, it's very different being a first team coach, I'm sure, to the focal point of everything that this club is about. And I think they might see him as a first team coach right now. And, you know, his one shot at, you know, managing, he didn't do particularly well. It wasn't a massive job, was it? It was a, you know, relatively small job by comparison to Liverpool Football Club. He's obviously more experienced and a better coach now, but he is all, you know, although he's a massive influence on the way that we play, he is still part of a coaching team.
Yeah,
it's not. He's not just the guy. He doesn't do the video analysis or anything else. So you know, you might be a big part of it, but you're not the whole. And I just don't think they fancy him because of that until he's gone out and proved it. So I think they're going to look to find somebody who's proved that he can do it in the past. You know, there's a few names. I think, you know, Zerbi's one of them that they'll be looking at, or certainly would have been earlier on. 6 months ago, he might have been top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
I think Xabi Alonso is someone you're going to want to have a chat to. Spalletti, who won the league with Napoli and then stepped down. I think he's now the Italian manager, would be one of those names who can, you know, he ended a massive drought for Napoli. You know, it was early 90s, wasn't it, that they won the league, and then they come back and win the league and he steps down. I think Nagelsmann will still probably interest him. Well, he's the German manager now, isn't he? Mm-hmm. So there doesn't seem to be any prime candidates where you go, oh, that's clearly the guy for me. So it's all about connections for Liverpool and what they know that we don't.
That's the thing for me, Keo. It's why we put Xabi Alonso ahead of everyone else, because there are, for me, no outstanding, no-brainer decisions out there. So when Brendan Rodgers looks like his time's coming to an end, Carlo Ancelotti and Jurgen Klopp are gettable. You know, to the point where, you know, they're the ones, the two guys who are up for the job. Whereas when Kenny leaves, you know, Bobby Martinez is going for coffee with, you know, an ice cream with John Henry on the streets in Boston. You know, it's Brendan Rodgers, and it's the talk of like Van Gaal as director of football, and, you know, and Brendan and Bobby, and you're like, they were seen as it. Klopp and Carlo Ancelotti are seen as it, and it's, there doesn't feel like there's no one I'm desperate to steal. There's no one who feels ready. And Alonso's Liverpool connection is the thing that makes me feel the most relaxed about it. That, and he looks like the coolest human being that's ever walked planet Earth. And it's down staff, doesn't it? But it's a stupid thing, but it actually matters to some extent as well. I don't know how you feel about the Xabi stuff.
I wake up and I'm on Team Xabi by the afternoon. I'm thinking, what's he ever won? And then by tea time, I'm back on Xabi. So it's a tough one, but I need to be careful here, because sentiment doesn't win you trophies. So the Liverpool connection's great, but Gerrard had a great first 12, 18 months in his managerial career, and now you wouldn't touch him with a barge pole.
Yeah.
So it can change very, very quickly. I'm not saying he's the same manager, because he's not. I don't think he even plays the same way as Gerrard. We've always known Xabi's got a football brain, a massive one. So there's that. But the reason why Pep Linders can't get the job is because the team don't fancy him. The club don't fancy him, and, you know, his short managerial career didn't go well. So what are we looking at? We're looking at someone who's done something. We're looking for someone who's won something. And that's when you start getting problems then, because De Zerbi, Alonso, these names we're mentioning, they're not somebody who can come in. Like, right now, when you talk about the Ancelotti and the Klopp being available, we knew what we needed.
like right now we need an Ancelotti more than we need a Klopp, if you know what I mean. We need someone who's going to come in and he knows the score with the European Cup and knows the score with the league. And if that's for 3 years or 5 years, I want proven trophy winners, but there's not one out there. So I don't know. It's also whether the club are looking for that, whether they think, right, we can't see the next 10-year manager. I'd rather get somebody in for 2 or 3 years and see whether Xabi does do that or see whether he does do that. Emery. Like, I think he got treated really harshly by Arsenal. I'm not saying I want him, by the way, before anyone goes mad, but he got treated really harshly by Arsenal. He's done great things at Villa. He's won trophies. So, yeah, I don't know. But I'm probably, if you put a gun to my head now, I'd probably say Xabi Alonso. And the reasons why, because he looks cool and he was mustard in midfield, you know what I mean?
No, but this is the thing, you're stepping into the biggest shoes that there's been in a generation in Liverpool hot seats. You're going to need some degree of armour. You're going to need some degree of separation, something that allows you to get through a tough period. And that's my thing about all these, because I look at when other managers have joined other clubs, because like Ten Hag won stuff before joining Manchester United. You know, Jose Mourinho's gone in God knows how many clubs. You know, he's got that, like, you know, Man United were hoping they were going to do that with Jose Mourinho. They were just going to plug a gap. They were, you know, he's a guy who's a winner. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to be there for 5 years, 10 years and rebuild the whole thing, but we can get a bit of juice out of him in the short term. You know, the Gerrard thing is obviously, yeah, it's mad. I was all in. It just, we all were, weren't we? You know what I mean? It's not that
when
long
he won the title with Rangers. Yeah. It was like, well, he's done fantastic. If you go into another club now and do well, we'll have him. But it's
not where I like that, is it?
But yeah, you know, and again, like the Pochettino thing at Chelsea, he'll eventually, if he's given time, he'll eventually get good out of Chelsea, because I think he's a really good manager. But their fans were on his back after 2 months, because ultimately there's something they need, and it's not even the personality, it's they need to know that their guy knows how to win. Because if they can't get wins, they can't get silverware, then they'll fuck him off, because that's what they're used to. We're in such a weird sort of position with this, and Xabi's connection with the fans and the fact that he looks like such a dude will help him, whereas it's just, I look at De Zerbi and he might be a better tactical fit and all that, but there's just something about him that goes, if we have a bad month, will our fans have him, is my concern. Yeah. With someone,
I think,
like him. And Frank as well, by the way.
There was one more name that I would probably look at prior to knowing that the coaching staff were going, because I think Zizou Zidane would have been the one to slot in and just be the guy with everything else the same. That sort of poster boy, you know, best midfielder in the world at his time, bar Gerrard, of course. And just the fact that he was so good and has won 3 European Cups and everything, it felt like he's a guy who can just, everyone else does the hard work, I just come and add the magic dust. But without a coaching staff, I'd be like, Zidane, really? Oh, I'm not sure I fancy that anymore, which is man.
Does he speak English? Want to speak English?
There's no interest in speaking English.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I think if he would have been interested in a job in England, Man United would have got him in that sense. I think Man United would have threw everything at him. He's won 3 European Cups. I say he's one of the best players ever.
Well, I asked this question on Twitter, like, is he a good manager? Does anyone
know?
Which is, and again, I just want to clarify, as I did on Twitter, I know what he's won. I've looked at it and I've re-familiarised myself with his playing honours and his managerial honours. And I was in the stadium when he won one of those 3 European Cups as well. So I've lived it. But I honestly have no idea whether, and Gerrard's the same. But except actually, it's been a bit proven now, because Gerrard did that thing of, he's tried to do it legitimately. Companies doing that as well, where if you pick the wrong club, it can, and you've not got the right people around you, it can absolutely fucking. Zidane's managed to protect
on the bounce.
Yeah. I know. Look, I know he did, but then he got off when it got a bit tough, and then he came back and won another league title, I think, and then got off again. But that's what I mean. Is he a good? Yeah. I couldn't point to him dragging anything up and you know, grabbing a club on his shoulders and making it work. I mean, we're seeing Xavi, he's just walking out of Barcelona. We'll do that on the Bias Footy Pod, but because it's too much pressure for him, and he was seen as being this, going to be the next great sort of manager as well. It's wild, absolutely wild. And that was the thing about Klopp. He had the experience of winning. When Rafa came in from Valencia, you could go, there's a guy who's just toppled Barcelona and Real Madrid for La Liga titles, and he's won a European trophy along the way. We're having him because we know he's got that proven track record. Everyone who's got a proven track record or proven track record in inverted commas, doesn't look like they'd necessarily play the right footy or be the right personality fit. And everyone who's got the right personality fit hasn't got the track record. So what would you rather?
Clock.
Track record. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cups, trophies for me at the minute. Like I think the point is the Shankly to Paisley thing. I think we made comparisons a few times and I said it before, they weren't the same people at all. But it's a bit different because Bob was promoted internally, but the type of person that Bob was, he wasn't a Klopp, he wasn't a Shankly. So, someone who's just definitely going to win cups for me, but that's not there, so I just don't know.
See, I spoke earlier about personality, didn't I? But that is such a good point because I sit here at the end of Jurgen Klopp's time at Liverpool and think, how the hell did he not win more? Like, how on it? And it's because of Manchester City majority, because they picked up all the trophies, which we probably should have picked up in that time. And I don't think Jurgen Klopp feel like he should have won more. And it kills me that he didn't, well, he might still do it, but that Premier League title, he never actually got to celebrate with us. Mm-hmm. Like, we won it, but he was in a hotel somewhere in lockdown. Like, we couldn't fully go and celebrate that. So that is quite important to just, because this feels like a team. Because this feels like a team, which, once again, it's not long since I said that's the greatest Liverpool side I'll probably ever see, and they were at the top of football. And yet I look at the excitement in this football team and think to myself, oh my God, what we're creating here can be unbelievable. And yet, without Jurgen Klopp, I just need someone who's going to make me feel like this team gets the trophies it deserves it gets, because I don't know how you do that without Jurgen Klopp. Because he is, in my eyes, the best manager.
Yeah. Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? Really is. Like, you know, go on. Oh, go on.
Epiphany or?
Sort of.
Eureka moment.
Basically, do you go to, give Xabi a few months, and even if he runs it close, that's a man who can compete for the title, isn't it? If he falls off next week and starts losing games and they end up with a battle for fourth, then you've got to be like, right, we need the killer. We need someone who's guaranteed trophies, don't care whether it's in the Greek league or what. Do you know what I mean? Which one, I want a winner. But as Alonso genuinely takes Leverkusen from relegation fight to title fight in 18 months, that's by not spending money, by playing.
Yeah.
Then I'm in.
Yeah. And that's the big thing for Xabi, is that, and the more I've looked into him, my immediate thing, because the Gerrard thing looms large in everyone's brain, doesn't it? But the thing is, just to clarify this, just because it turned out Gerrard wasn't a great manager doesn't mean that will happen to Xabi Alonso. And the fact is, yes, he's not. It's like, how do you compare stuff? Does winning the title, and winning the title in Scotland, you know, we broke Celtic stranglehold, so it actually was an achievement in and of itself. They had a good run in the Europa League as well. But with almost finishing second in the Bundesliga, where does that rank? It's almost impossible to weigh this across. It's like the Ange Postecoglou stuff of, there's a guy who knows how to win, but he doesn't know how to win stuff that we would all go, oh God, look, yeah, he hasn't won the Champions League and he hasn't won one of the top European leagues, but he's a winner and he's got the personality. That's the Alonso thing. The more I see what he's done in how he's done it, it feels like that's something that you could translate to another football club.
It's also important to state that he's also still in the Europa League, that Liverpool could face that by a Leverkusen side. And if he can title charge whilst also being in a European competition, well, that's even more, you know, it's more, it's something you can hang your hat on more, because doing it when you've only got one game a week is absolutely sound. But if you're coming into Liverpool, and at the moment in time, we are top of the table. So if we manage to stay there or there about, let's hope we are top. But if we've got European football next season, you're going to have to juggle a title charge with European football. So the fact that he's doing that right now is also good.
Our personal expectations are going to be a huge part of this. Because look at the end of Arsene Wenger, and look, in fairness, there's two Wengers, isn't there? There's the pre-stadium Wenger when he was competitive, and then there was the post one where he made them a top four side regularly. When they finally stopped putting them in the top four, they hadn't gotten worse, the league had just gotten a bit better that season, so his average points total was about the same as what it would have been to get you in top four in most seasons. But to the eyes, it was really finished outside top four, and that's him done for most people. And it's whether we are, what will our fan base accept when we don't win the title next season or the season after that? And yet we're still probably going to be up against Pep Guardiola in those times. And that's the weird thing, is that you're protected by Klopp, aren't you? In some regards. But Liverpool could go and get two 90-point seasons back to back and not win the league title. Are we going to be cool? Are we going to be able to keep our heads and, you know, maintain that? Or is there going to be that outside pressure of, it's got to be trophies, it's got to be a win, it's got to be all this?
I've been saying all year, even if we don't win the league this year, I guarantee you're winning next year. Now, that has just changed massively now, because it could be completely different next year. Mm-hmm. We might be after City, have the same conversation, but be prepared and be like, look, it doesn't matter that we're not winning every week. It's not about that right now. And that's going to be really, really weird, because the bar has been 97 points, European Cup finals. And not every manager, hardly any manager can come in and deliver that straight away. Do you know what I mean? No one ever does that. So it's a tough one, really. But just Jabby can forget about proving himself in the Europa League, though, Chloe, please. Just thought about that.
Absolutely battered us in the UEFA Cup with our Valencia side. Mm-hmm. And it was like, ooh, okay. But it's the impossible job. And that's why, again, watching that press conference and seeing that Billy Hogan looked at least pretty laid back about the whole thing, instead of being, you know, like it's been dropped a bombshell, and he's just white as a sheet, and looks like he's not slept for a week, and he's, oh yeah, okay, right, yeah, well, the process, you know, when Everton sacked people, and they go, well, now the process, we've sacked the manager, now the process is going to begin, and you know that that's true
after, you know, the press conference.
And now I'm going to go and look for a manager. What do you do? Look at a manager.
So by interested, no one. Fuck. What are we going to do?
Anyone want to put any random outside shouting? Can I throw a weird one in?
Go on.
Thiago, player manager.
Yep, not happening.
Virgil van Dijk, player manager.
Can you imagine how many press conferences Thiago would miss? Fucking illness, he's injury.
He's guaranteed for the press conferences. He's not. Definitely.
He's not.
I saw, because Virgil refused to be drawn on his future, which I think is, I guess, probably the sensible thing for him to say at this point. But anyone else got any random ones that's...
Someone put in my comment section, don't worry, Chloe, Xabi Alonso will come, and his right-hand man, it'll be Steven Gerrard. And someone, I was like, that, I don't want Steven Gerrard anywhere near my football club at this moment in time.
People,
I don't,
are
apologize,
forgetting that the Gerrard-Alonso thing was what... You know how, like, there's a north-south divide in the country, but actually there's one in our city as well. So everyone goes on about, oh, Gerrard and Lampard, where the real question was Gerrard and Alonso, could they play together? We were having our own one of them on a daily basis while the country was going, can Gerrard and Lampard play together?
Like, Rafa had him at right back.
Steven Gerrard playing fullback in a Champions League final because we own Xabi Alonso. He played right mid, scored fucking 15, 20 goals
then,
from
then
right
front,
right,
didn't he, basically?
Yeah. Imagine Gerrard and Alonso in the manager dugout. Oh my God. I don't think I could go through it. Couldn't go through it again. But it is a wild shout. Anyone got any more wild shouts? Let me know in the comments. Couple more, Chad, and we'll do a quick five on the Chelsea game. Regan asks, can you ever see Klopp returning to the managerial hot seat? No. I saw someone saying, like, could he go back to Dortmund? And I thought I could see him going back to Mainz in about 10 years for like a season, for like a laugh. You know what I mean? Like, just for...
To round it off.
Yeah. Just to come out of retirement. You know, if they needed his help or something like that. But I can't see that he'd want to go back to Dortmund, because why would you? And it's the big question I have with Klopp of, like, where do you go next? Because you're not going to go to like a struggler, are you? You know, if you're stressed with having all the responsibility,
the national
team's
the one that makes sense for him, isn't it? The Germany job, because it's not as huge a commitment as running a Liverpool.
More time off.
Yeah, exactly.
Press are nicer.
You don't have to sign anyone. You can just pick from the lads that you're allowed to play with. You know, that's it, isn't it? Like,
as long,
you know,
as you don't scratch your bum and smell your fingers.
He did pretty well, by all accounts. It just seems like it's a lot less stressful. And I actually feel like someone like him, with his personality, will be able to get the best of the players in a short space of time. Because you can't be a tactical, like, absolute frigging nerd with international, because you just don't have the time to coach. But what you can do is you can G them up and you can send them off into battle.
We said that about Sam Allardyce at the time, didn't we?
Well, they run through a brick wall for Klopp, anyone would.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you be happy if he took the England job? I think the only thing that could ever get me interested in England is if Jürgen Klopp took the England job.
Only if he took the England job and stopped, playing Trent at right back would be hilarious if he did that, but mainly just stop calling up Liverpool players.
Yeah,
just so we get an advantage.
Yeah.
I can see him managing in a year's time.
Who?
I can, and I think if it's a club, it would be someone who is comfortably financially and probably spends. I'm not getting the FSG brigade revved up here, but there is an element of this has been hard, and it is really, really hard, and I've missed out on titles because you know, sometimes it's been really, really tough to have to rebuild this and this. So when he mentioned another club in England, that didn't say Germany or England. Mm-hmm. I think there's a possibility that he goes maybe to a Bayern Munich one day. Mm-hmm. But I think what you think. I think it's the national job. You have a year out, let the national team do its work, and then get called up 6 months off every year.
How far away, sorry, is the new camp or the new Camp Nou from being finished? Because this is the funny thing, isn't it? Because Xavi's obviously leaving at the end of the season, and then all of a sudden it's like you've seen Klopp's actually being linked with that job, and he's cut short a sabbatical before to take an interesting club opportunity, you know, us. But I do wonder, like,
they've got less money than us.
Oh, I know, but it's still. Yeah, it's still boss. Anyway, I tell you what, we'll do that on the next show.
The same problem then, hasn't he, basically?
Yes.
Yeah. Jose Cabranero says, I want to throw out the name of Inzaghi.
Yeah, Simone Inzaghi.
It's a bankrupt team. He's done miracles. There you go.
He's got them playing well as well, Inter, to be fair to him, hasn't he? So.
Yeah.
And Regan, once again, says, is Shanks to Paisley similar to Klopp to Landers? Only in so much as, like, Shankly was the big, you know, stand on steps and do big speeches, rouse people with those kind of, like, his big words and his big ideas, like, that run through brick walls. And Pep isn't that, you know, but, like, by all accounts, like, Bob Paisley just hated talking to people, and, you know, and preferred to just, like, you know, just let people get on with their own good own stuff. So, yeah, not really. But then again, there's never a straight. None of this stuff ever lines up. We're all desperate to divine the future by looking at the past.
That would mirror the old boot room. It would mirror that. But in terms of who they are and whether they can do it, I just think it's two different things.
Yeah, I agree on that. Okay, then life and football goes on. We've got Chelsea midweek, Chris. As we kind of referenced in part one, we've got players back, and all of a sudden there's actually some really interesting decisions to be made around this team. The forwards are all in good form. We've got a bunch of midfielders we can choose from. All of a sudden, fingers crossed, Alexis McAllister, he was rested for the weekend, that he'll be available to come, because he's one of the few, I think, nailed on, particularly in the midfield. We've got choices of fullback. We've got choices all over the pitch. All of a sudden, big decisions to be made.
Yeah, it's easy to make wrong decisions when you haven't got your hands tied, though, isn't it? It actually becomes harder in some ways for Jürgen, because now he's got a, you know, the team's been playing so well. Now, you know, he's fortunate, isn't he? I suppose ultimately his substitutions have been helping us out for weeks anyway, and he's always got those lads to bring on. But, you know, it'd be great to. I think he should go with Joe Gomez again at left back. You know, I don't think after 100 plus days out for Andy Robertson, he'll be in anywhere near the form to be able to start this game. And I think Joe Gomez has been absolutely superb. On the other side, though, we'll be looking to try and get Trent back in, even though Bradley's been exceptional. McAllister obviously comes straight back in for me. And yeah, we just hopefully just go and destroy Chelsea, to be honest with you.
Keo, any interesting things you do with this 11?
Agree with Chris there. Play Joe Gomez. Don't think you want to put Andy Robbo in at the deep end there. I put Trent back in the side. McAllister, depending on what he's looking like in training, what his numbers are like, Szoboszlai in the midfield. But you're not on, and then maybe Gravenberch there as well. I think you very rarely will see a Jones or an Elliott not in there, the way things have gone over the past few weeks. So, yeah, maybe that. But then on up front, as long as Diogo's playing, I'm fine, mate.
I mean, that's the interesting one, though, isn't it, Chloe? Because obviously, still no Salah, as we know. We'll talk about Egypt going out on the Bias Footy Pod, but it's who gets picked on the right-hand side now, because Jota's done a great job through the middle. He's he basically scores from every position is my kind of point I'm driving at with this, and it's what you want to do with Darwin, I think, as much as anything else.
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking me right now, Darwin off the left, Jota up the middle, and Diaz on the right. Why? Because I enjoyed that against Arsenal. Obviously, in the Carabao Cup, it was. I've enjoyed it since we've switched it in game at times. I think it was Bournemouth, and also the other day. At times, you know, they were all interchanging with each other. The front three. There was times where Darwin Núñez was popping up on the right wing. At times, he was then switching to the left wing, and Diogo Jota just get him the closest to the goal. Where he scores his goal from yesterday, it's just a lethal finish. It's clinical. He's just chased on a really poor header by the defender, but he's anticipated that's going to happen, and he's the player I want in and around that area who the chances are going to fall to. So yeah, that would be my front three.
It's for me, I just think Darwin's, I think he's flourishing as the main man for us at the moment. And then it comes down to, I'd go Diaz off the left, Darwin through the middle, and Jota off the right again. Yeah, that feels reasonably all right by me. Curtis in midfield, if Szoboszlai's there and ready to go, fine, put him back in.
Yeah. The corner as well for Van Dijk was superb. There was another couple afterwards as well where you think, wow, these corners are absolutely exceptional.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it, isn't it, of course? I'd go with you. In terms of the front three, and it goes back to that press conference a week or so ago now, where Klopp just said, "Yeah, I decided to just put them in the 1A positions, and Diaz and Núñez in the 1A positions has worked, and Jota being two-footed, being able to just float whenever he wants."
Yeah,
I think he's just got that bit more freedom. He's not tied to the right in the same way that Salah is he? So he just sort of goes across and does whatever. Mm-hmm. So I like that front three, to be honest with you.
Diaz is just, I think he's got a big performance in him. He's been getting there. He obviously started to score a couple of goals again, started to have those performances where he's just terrorising people when he gets on the ball. I'd like him to go and do that in a big game now. He's a big team. Just go and give them an absolute nightmare of a night and see what comes of it. And then come back to the other end. Trent comes back. Yeah, Gomez deserves that place now for me. Canate, Verge, kind of picks itself really, doesn't it? And then McAllister's the only other one. If as a world where McAllister's not fit, I wouldn't be against just putting Trent in the six and keeping Bradley at right back. Yeah, other than that, yeah, it's about right.
So if we all went on the same front three, just in different positions,
my position, I'd probably put Diaz on the right, Núñez left, and Jota centre. So yeah, play them three.
So same front three, yeah
interesting. Poor old Cody, he'll get his chance.
If he wouldn't have missed the sitter, maybe, just maybe.
I'm not a bit of an arse in that respect, like, you don't miss from there and then get a start.
Yeah, right, okay, cool. Yeah, if you want to discuss anything that we have done and you're here on YouTube, you can use the comment section underneath. Make sure you drop a like as well. And don't forget to use the Klopp code to get a free month of RevmenPlus.com. And one last thing, because while we're here, grab your tickets for either Belfast, Dublin or London to see us partying with Keogh. It's going to be a good laugh regardless of what Liverpool do, because, you know, we'll bring in Keogh. That's what he does. We'll do the somber footy chat and he'll do the party tunes. That'll be fine. Other than that, thank you so much. Come and check out Bias Football Podcast.
You wouldn't want it the other way around, by the way.
Yeah, somber footy chat with Keogh and then we do the party tunes. Yeah, doesn't have the same ring. But anyway, thank you so much. See you all soon. Ta-da.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both as twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.